Your brother dropped by this morning.
You drive all this way to tell me that?
I think you could have let me know that everyone in your family's a midget.
Well, they're not midgets, Carol. They're dwarves.
Whatever. It suddenly occurred to me that it's a genetic thing, right?
Yeah, it's a genetic thing.
Okay, so just tell me. If you and I have a kid together, is it going to be a midget?
Carol, don't say midget, say dwarf.
Look, just answer the goddamn question, Stephen.
It's possible. It's definitely possible.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Before we get going today with the main event, maybe an all-timer in the history of this podcast, I don't know. We do need to pay tribute to a former all-timer, a Hall of Famer on this pod, who passed away just yesterday. Our boy Cormac McCarthy died.
Oh, yeah.
And we owe him one for The Counselor.
That's true. That's very true.
I mean, we owe the man a tremendous debt. I mean, obviously, some of the great novels in American history, No Country for Old Men, all well and good, The Road, but like...
And then one of the worst movies of all time.
He wrote The Counselor, our guy.
This is news to me.
Oh, wait, I didn't hear this. Wait a second. You didn't know about this? Cormac McCarthy.
I didn't know he passed away. I'm just learning live on the air.
Yeah, I'm sorry to break the news to you.
Oh, counselor.
Yeah, like
counselor.
Yeah, it's counselor. It's the counselor. Hey, counselor. How's it going, counselor?
Do you think we can attend his funeral and just go counselor?
What would be our claim?
So sorry, counselor. So sorry.
We talked about him on a podcast.
That we potted about him? That we talked so much shit about him on our podcast?
We did.
One of the great literary minds of all time, and we just talked about his worst thing?
Yeah, barely.
And trashed him for it as if that was indicative of his great career?
Well, yeah.
I think people should be judged by their worst deeds only.
Right.
Only their worst. Yes. That's right.
Life is not about what you achieve. It is about your failures.
That's very true.
Well, if you don't love me at my worst, you know, you don't deserve me at my best.
I'm not interested in who is the best person who ever lived. I'm interested in who is the least worst person who ever lived.
Yeah, so RIP to him. I started reading Blood Meridian last night, and it's an unbelievable book.
Yeah, I'm like, how the hell is that going?
It's really good.
Yeah, everyone says it like changes the makeup of their mind and they become a different person after reading it, and it's that kind of book.
Blood Meridian exploded like 2 months ago or something due to a YouTuber named Wendigoon, who I watch quite frequently. He'll do these like 3-hour expositories on just interesting topics, and he did a whole thing about Blood Meridian, and just a week later it exploded in sales because he has like multiple millions of very dedicated followers. He's in fact the same person who brought us Raft.
Is that right?
The same guy who I watched about the Raft thing that we brought to the documentary month. Yeah, he talked about Blood Meridian in depth.
Wow, sounds like he should go to Cormac's funeral.
Yeah, he should. I think it was like a 4-hour YouTube video, no cuts, where he just talks about the book. Like, it's
sick.
Well, yes, it's supposedly one of the great books of all time. So
yeah.
The guy can write some prose.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta give him
some
credit.
I understand.
Like,
yeah.
You know, we kill him for the counselor script, and understandably so, but like, I mean, the guy does have a way with words. It's undeniable, man. The guy is
even in its own weird, twisted way, The Counselor has a way with words.
Oh yeah, yeah, I mean, it's easy on the ears at times, if not like the most coherent storytelling thing.
No, not at all.
You know, the dialogue is pretty though.
It's very gynecological dialogue, Nico.
Totally.
That's right.
Hey, the truth has no temperature, Adam. All right, that's all I know. Anyway, yeah. So the movie we're doing today, called Tiptoes. This was a movie somehow I had never heard of.
That surprised me when we were talking about this. I have heard about this movie and I've been avoiding it at all costs.
Yeah.
Why didn't you bring this sooner, Adam? That's my question for you, because I think you're responsible.
I've known about this film for years, guys. Years and years. And it's one of those movies where I saw the poster, I read the synopsis, and I watched like one clip of Gary Oldman chatting with Matthew McConaughey, and I vowed I will never ever watch this movie.
Well, you've broken your vow.
Thanks a lot, guys.
First of many, I'm sure.
Oh no.
You just put a bid in on a house, Nick. Don't say things like that. Yeah, let's hope that your marriage goes a little better than the marriage in this movie.
That's a good joke.
Yeah. Tiptoes, dude.
Holy shit.
No, if I had heard of it, I mean, I would have brought this to the program a lot sooner because this thing is like manufactured in a lab for us.
It is.
It's a disaster with three Oscar winners at the center of it. There are three Oscar winners and Peter Dinklage.
Yeah. Hell of a cocktail.
Yeah.
Is he an Emmy winner?
Sure. Of course he is.
And a porn star. Don't forget the porn star.
Who?
Sally.
Sally. Yeah. Porn star.
Oh, is that right?
Didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Big old porn
Adam,
star.
Are you familiar with her work? Or?
Very familiar. Very familiar.
So what, like an AVN winner too?
Again, maybe. Might be.
All of the awards. They got an EGOT put together. Yeah. So, yeah, you have big names, early 2000s, a high concept premise that can go horribly wrong and did go horribly wrong. You have offensive casting decisions. You have a wild third act. I mean, it's everything you need in a Why Is This a Thing movie.
Sure.
And my favorite part, it just ends.
It just ends.
Man, does it just end.
It's like, we're cute.
No denouement, nothing, dude.
And it's a confident ending. It's not like, perfect.
Right.
We're done.
Right.
That's the end.
Yeah, it's not like, yeah, we put the bow on top.
It's not like, we got to end this fucking thing. No, yeah. No.
Turn it off! Turn it off! That's what it is.
The director's just like, what if it just ended?
No, it's a very intentional ending, but I still can't fathom how any of the choices were made to end up there.
Yeah, I don't know what the ending was initially, but I do know that the original cut of this movie is a whopping 150 minutes long. 2.5 hours was the original director's cut that screened for a public audience in Austin, Texas before the movie got its straight to DVD release.
Peter Dinklage said it was a beautiful movie.
Yes. That was his exact quote, that it was a beautiful film that the producers butchered by taking it away from Matthew Bright.
Well, he's forgetting the fact that Gary Oldman's in this movie.
Playing a little person. Yeah. That's right. Yes. Gary Oldman playing a little person.
Yes.
Okay, so you're telling me there's a 2.5 hour cut out there and we got the 90 minute cut, though.
That's correct.
Can we get our hands on the tune? Does it exist?
I'll tell you one person that has a copy of it. Adam, you might be surprised to hear this. One Nicholas Winding Refn. Is a what? Fan of this movie.
The 2 hour and a half?
He's just a fan of the movie, the 90 minute version, and he got in touch with one of the producers and was like, hey, can I get the director's cut?
What?
And he, yeah, has a copy of the director's cut. I don't know if there's like a DVD out there, or I mean, I doubt it.
I guess I get it.
You do?
I guess I get it.
Oh, this movie is wild, dude. Like,
yeah.
Where do we want to start with this? So let's just get into the plot right now.
Okay.
Start with that.
Don't you need to know who's who to talk about the plot? But
we'll unspool that as we go.
Exactly right.
All right. So we open with one Matthew McConaughey in an art studio with his fiance.
Fiance played by Kate Beckinsale.
The hottest woman alive.
In 2003. Yeah.
In the peak of her powers. Post Pearl Harbor, I think. Like, ridiculously hot. They gave her like a hot art student tattoo as well, which made her even more hot.
Could be amongst the best convincing American accents of all time.
It's an unbelievable American accent that she's really good at that.
Yes. She is British as all fuck, and you would have no idea.
Yeah, this film opens with McConaughey in this art studio turning down a blowjob from his fiance.
From Kate Beckinsale.
From Kate Beckinsale. Right.
Not just any fiance. Yeah.
It opens with him literally being like, not now, I gotta make it to the midget convention.
Can we establish this now so we don't get in any trouble for the rest of the pod? What is the terminology we're using?
I guess little people is the most polite way of doing it.
Okay.
This film evolves its language throughout. It starts out using the word midget, only to have McConaughey correct her and be like, hey, it's not midget, it's dwarf.
Right.
And then later, out of the blue, she says, it's actually little people. And he's like, hey, look at you learning the terminology. So I guess little people is the best. But if you ask Peter Dinklage, his character in the film, he doesn't like little people.
Dink, when they asked him, like, is it offensive that Gary Oldman essentially did the equivalent of blackface for little people? He was like, yeah, Gary Oldman can do whatever he wants. It's Gary Oldman. It's like, I don't like this whole PC bullshit. Yeah, no, but I think Little People is the way to go. I don't know what it is in 2023, but I know in 2002, Little People was the term.
Yeah.
Gary Oldman, not just playing a dwarf, but playing McConaughey's twin brother.
Right.
We have a remake of Twins, guys.
It's not far off. The casting choices, the look. I mean, it's baffling.
So let's talk about the Gary Oldman casting for a second. He's obviously not a little person. You should mention that.
Yes, Nico.
He is a man of average height. The dink is right there.
Yes.
They have the dink on the set of the movie, playing a fairly prominent character.
Every single person who chooses to watch this film in 2023 is going to be thinking the exact same thing.
Right. Now, I did not realize this. This stunned me when I looked it up on IMDb, but this was before The Station Agent. Mm. This was a year before The Station Agent, which was like Dinklage's big coming out party or whatever. That was his star-making role. And like, I did not realize this was the thing that broke the glass ceiling. Well, I didn't realize, like, this is the first Dink performance. But, like, had this come in the opposite order, like, yeah, obviously Dinklage would have been the lead in this movie.
Right.
So he's right there. You have, like, this great actor right there that can play the part without prosthetics and special effects and, like, being on his knees all the time, waddling around with a hunchback. And instead they decide to make him, like, this weird French dude that has sex with Patricia Arquette in a park.
I don't understand this character. What is this character? What is he doing in this movie? What's his affiliation with Rolf?
They're just buds.
They're just buds?
Yeah, they're just buds.
Why is he French?
What, you saying French people can't have dwarfism?
I'm just curious, like, why the choice? It's just so random.
Yeah, he's French, he's a Marxist, and he's also kind of a chauvinist.
I have a theory that the script didn't require Dinklage to have a French accent.
Oh.
Because he's an actor first. You know what I mean? So I think he's like, I don't want to just play a dwarf because I am a dwarf. I want to play a character. So I'm putting on a French accent. That's my theory.
So he just showed up. He's like, wee wee.
Yeah. And they're like, all right, man.
Oh, say, that's smooth. What is this?
It's an original creation of mine. Imported cherry flavored morphine syrup from France. And cognac.
Ooh.
Oh, I just wish I had a fucking crepe.
You don't write that in a script, dude. That's straight out of the Dink's mouth.
Hell yeah.
So Oldman, not a little person, also 10 years older than McConaughey, so the ages don't match up at all. There's no way they could pass as twins. Because Gary Oldman is one of those guys that's always looked a little bit older than he actually is, you know?
Now, Gary Oldman likes these kind... Obviously, he likes these kind of odd, off-kilter sort of parts.
Sure.
When did True Romance come out?
This is what I was going to bring up. Speaking of Patricia Arquette, True Romance comes out in 93.
Okay.
And there was a whole wave of controversy, and still is a whole wave of controversy, for him kind of maybe doing blackface in that movie.
He's not doing blackface. The pitch to him from Tony Scott was, listen, I need you to play a white guy who thinks he's black.
Who thinks he's black.
Yes.
Is it White Boy Day?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's White Boy Day.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, no, right. He likes pushing the edge. He likes pushing, and he's a great actor, and like great things have come of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this is kind of a bridge too far.
A little bit. Why does he have to be a hunchback?
I think part of it was because he's going to be on his knees the entire time. He's going to waddle around.
Okay.
So they had to, first of all, give him the cane, and then also kind of give him some minor deformities to justify his gait.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. But like, that's
no. But it's also a critical point in this film that being a dwarf apparently means you're constantly in immeasurable pain.
Right. No, I think some of it was to disguise part of his arms too, because he actually shortens his arms as part of the method here.
Yes. Yeah.
So like, part of that was in the hunchback. Yeah. I mean, they go to extreme lengths. Like, they use body doubles, and it's very distracting when they do use body doubles, because those actual little people have little people-sized torsos.
Yes.
There's nothing they can do about Gary Oldman's torsos. I mean, they could put him on his knees or whatever and make him short, but, like, he still has the upper body of Gary Oldman.
And the hands, I kept being like, arms are still this. They're just this is such a weird-looking person concocted here.
It's so weird, dude.
It is so wrong. And it doesn't matter how much effort Gary Oldman puts into the performance. You're just never buying it for a second. There's nothing he can do.
Right.
Why would you even attempt this?
I don't actually think he's that bad.
No, I kind of, well, I kind of agree with that in the sense that, like, he's good enough at, like, delivering the lines and selling, like, a physical performance, but you're just never convinced of the character.
No, as far as,
yeah.
No one could have done a better job. How about that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with
except
that.
Except for the guy who is next to him.
Yeah, except the entire movie. Exactly. For the second guy on the call sheet. Yeah, that guy could have done a pretty good job. Yeah.
Man, there are some wonky ass effects in some of the wide shots when they're shooting his feet, and you could just tell the feet are just like clip arted in.
Yeah.
It's so obvious and so wrong.
How about when he sits on a couch and clearly they've cut a hole in the couch to put his legs through, and then they just put like the
dummy
fake fucking,
legs that aren't moving an inch.
Yeah, it's like a bad Halloween costume or whatever.
Oh, it's so bad, man.
You know, it goes back to that question of like, is an actor an actor and they can play anybody, or do you need to like actually hire somebody for the part? There's people always talk about with race, you know.
Yeah, no, this is actually even more obvious than some of the whitewashing stuff.
That's actually
It's actually, yeah, you know, like I've seen blackface, although it's offensive, like I've seen it more convincing than this.
You've seen Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, no, like I have seen, not saying like it's good or whatever, but like I have seen, you know, race bending stuff that fools me. This does not fool me at any point.
No.
And at no point am I like, no, that's Gary Oldman kneeling the entire movie. It never doesn't look like Gary Oldman kneeling.
I know. This movie's a piece of crap. It's such garbage.
I'm kind of wondering about this director's cut now, though. Now that I know it's out there, I'm like, is there a good version of Tiptoes floating around somewhere? Like,
it's called Tiptoes.
It's so bad.
The movie's called Tiptoes. Can we start with that? Can we start about how like offensive and evil that it's called Tiptoes?
And it never explicitly uses the words Tiptoes in the script that I noticed.
No.
Goes along with the movie being perhaps the most tone deaf film I've ever seen in my life.
Well, again, Adam. Director's cut.
Oh yeah,
I'm saying there might be some context missing.
That's what the Dink said. The Dink was like, it was actually a pretty good straightforward drama that they kind of chopped up in the edit to make it, you know, more palatable.
It feels like an exploitation film to me.
Yes,
a lot like an exploitation film. I mean, it's a movie that is utilizing some of the most like obvious ideas for this subject matter and painting in such a stupid Broadway. Really does feel like an idiot with like a bucket of paint just throwing it at the wall here, and just like not very good filmmaking either. Like I really thought the filmmaking here was pretty crappy a lot of the time. That was my suspicion while watching it, like, God, who is this guy that made this movie? It's like this, because this is coming off to me like some crappy ass exploitation film. And then I did a little bit of research and the guy made a Ted Bundy film that I'm well aware of.
Oh, really?
That is an exploitation film.
Matthew Bright is the guy's name. This is the last movie that he ever did. He blames the producers of the film for that. Big indie guy, did a movie called Freeway with Reese Witherspoon and Kiefer Sutherland. That's probably his most iconic movie, which is kind of like a thriller remake of the Little Red Riding Hood story, fairy tale. You know what? I just want to play the trailer for this. Because I think the trailer will kind of be indicative of the tonal stuff that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Because this thing is an absolute mess, tonally speaking. And, like, you're not sure what genre it is in any given moment. And the trailer has even sharper of turns. So, here we go. Ready? Tiptoes.
Carol and Steven's life together was perfect.
I've got to get going.
Right this second. Hey, baby.
Hey, sweetie.
I love you.
There's one small problem.
Hi, I'm Ross. I'm his brother. We're twins.
Are your parents?
Yeah.
It can tear them apart.
I think you could have let me know that everyone in your family's a midget.
They're not midgets, Carol. They're dwarfs.
Whatever.
Or bring them together.
Hey, welcome. I'm Steven.
There you are.
This is Steven's father, Bruno, and his mom, Kathleen. And over behind the bar is Steven's brother, Rolf.
Hi. You could have prepared us for this, don't you think?
If you embarrass me, I'll never speak to you again, so just get it together.
Okay, so they play a lot of this scene, the scene where the parents meet each other. And if you were to see the trailer, you'd be like, oh, this is like a Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, meet the parents kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like a comedy of errors of like you meet the in-laws for the first time and they do things a little differently in that family. But at the end of the day, they learn to come together, right? You imagine that's what this is going to be for like the first 50 seconds of the trailer and perhaps the first half hour of the movie. Especially considering that it's starring Matthew McConaughey. Don't you? Isn't that what you thought it was going?
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. Certainly.
Yeah.
And there's lots of indicators that his character will have more to do with the story. And there's a lot of weird things that are dropped. But I guess I needed to see the longer cut to really get the full picture.
They cut 40% of the movie out.
It's a lot.
I can't get over this.
That's a lot of movie.
This is like a lot of not movie. Even fair.
Yeah.
I can see why this guy stopped working in the industry. He's like, fuck this. I'm going to go bag groceries. Fuck you guys.
Back to the trailer. 50 seconds in.
I think maybe I'm
pregnant. When the going gets rough, it's only the size of your heart that counts.
Would it really be that big of a deal if our kid was a dwarf?
You knocked up this great girl, and you didn't tell her that her baby's probably gonna be little.
I'm not like you.
We are so cute and cuddly. Don't discriminate against us.
You said these parties got a little wild. I never expected this. There's sure a lot of midgets around here.
You better back off, Goldie Hawn. My man can do what he wants to do.
I'm ready for an adult relationship.
What is this man doing in your bedroom?
All right, so now it's when the going gets tough, it's only the size of your heart that counts.
Followed by a bunch of relationship fights.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden we're in this very like PSA, we may be different on the outside, but our hearts are all the same, right? Mm. You know, we're in that kind of Lifetime movie territory.
Yeah.
No, but it's also like the narrator isn't matching the scenes that they're showing. It's like, be nice to your fellow citizens. And then it like cuts to like people shooting each other with AKs. Like it doesn't, the trailer isn't even tonally intact. Like,
well, that is the movie. It's a good representation of the movie, I suppose.
A walk down the aisle.
Stavern's he's a very lucky guy. I just hope he's smart enough not to screw it up.
Is just a beginning.
There'll be rough patches. There's no doubt about it.
Canal Plus and Langley Productions proudly present command performances from Kate Beckinsale, Matthew McConaughey, Patricia Arquette, and in the role of a lifetime, Gary Oldman.
Oh no! The role of a lifetime! Oh no!
Holy shit.
The role of a lifetime is an Oscar winner.
This movie, speaking of Tropic Thunder, this is like those joke trailers.
It is.
At the beginning of that movie, except it's a real movie.
Yeah. You know, it's like, you ever seen the recuts of like the Shining trailer, but to make it look like it's a comedy?
Yes.
You know, like you see those whenever like, yeah, like a YouTuber will change the genre of a movie in the trailer.
That's what this is.
Yeah that's what it's like. What? Because this movie actually has a much darker edge than the trailer implies.
It gets really rough, particularly when immediately after they have the baby and you get that scene where they're in their, they're back in their apartment and it's just like, what is this movie?
Yeah.
Why are we here now?
Yeah. No, Nick, I think you might be onto something about this director's cut, though. I think you might be, because you can tell there are large portions of the movie that are just not there.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's connective tissue that you could tell was removed and like weird tonal shifts. Like sometimes it just feels like there's an extra scene worth of stuff that would maybe, you know, get our characters to where they need to go.
Yeah, I felt like right at the end of the movie, I was like just starting to get into it. And then all of a sudden the credits were rolling. And I was just, I did not expect it. I was just like, oh, it's over. Okay. It just ended.
I laughed so hard when the credits rolled. It was hilarious. It's just such a demented idea of a movie.
It's so demented.
It's just like,
it's deranged. It's absolutely deranged.
It's a fucking crazy movie.
How do you write that down and like think this plays any other way than just super offensive?
Yeah.
Are we supposed to be touched by that final kiss? Like, because like, listen, I've seen movies before where it's like unconventional relationships that, you know, it was not all easy sailing, but we got here. You know, like, that's not what this is. This is like, oh my God, like, I fear for the main character's lives and I fear for the child at the center of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's deranged. It's absolutely deranged.
Important plot point. McConaughey gets Beckinsale pregnant.
Yes.
He's freaking out. And she's like, well, you always wanted to have kids. And he's like, not yet. And I think his moral dilemma is which you wouldn't know from the movie, is I didn't tell her that my entire family is dwarves, and it's possible that this baby will be a dwarf, and is he ready to deal with that?
Which they have been living together now for a year.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We imagine they've been dating for longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
They are planning on getting married.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even see a picture of the guy's family?
Listen, ladies, big green flag. You don't know anyone else that he's related to.
Different time.
Huge green flag.
There we go. I mean, yeah, do not pass go, do not collect $200, I guess. Just, that's...
Nothing better than a cagey, mysterious figure who won't let you meet his family.
I mean, yeah, that's a human trafficker.
Right.
You're dating a human trafficker.
Yeah.
You don't even, it doesn't even come up?
No. Nope.
You got any brothers or sisters? Like, it doesn't even seem like she knows if he has any siblings.
Nico, he's too busy fighting fires for some reason.
He is fighting fires.
No, he doesn't even fight fires.
What was that?
He trains other people.
He has the craziest job.
Again, why is that in the movie?
He trains other people to fight fires and then low-key fucks some of them.
Yeah, that was the... Why is that in the movie? It's just dropped.
It's so crazy. It's so crazy.
It's so weird.
I love that as a job, by the way. It's like, what does my character do for a job? They'll train firefighters. Not fight fires. They're like a drill sergeant for firefighters.
This is not a good plot device. We need to drop all firefighter plot devices in movies. They don't work. Not even Steven Spielberg could wrangle the firefighter plot device. It's bullshit.
Because they're not real jobs.
No, they're not.
That's firefighters right. Don't have actual careers. It's a fucking Ponzi scheme, all right?
Scheme.
How many fires are there on the planet a year?
Well, let's talk to Nova Scotia for a second.
Well, I guess that's true. I guess this is a bad week to bring that up.
Well, they're not doing a very good job, Adam.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
No, listen, I have a relative that's a firefighter. I don't think he put out a fire a day in his life.
No.
I don't think he even saw a fire.
No.
Yeah, maybe like he went out with a garden hose and put one out, but that's they don't work.
There was a
fire. All this firefighters are heroes bullshit. Give me a fucking break, dude.
They play a mean hand of cards, though, over at the fire station. And they throw together a great spaghetti dinner once a year.
Right.
My fire station does a pancake breakfast for Father's Day, which is the shit, and
right.
I love it dearly.
And they're raising money for what? So they can, like...
There was a fire that burned down on my road, like, a couple weeks ago. It was a meth house.
It burned a house down?
No, a meth house burned down. It burned down.
And what did they do about it?
Yeah, right.
Did they put the fire out, or
they did
the house
put the fire?
Down?
No, they did put the fire out, and then they
after
arrested
the house
the
burned
people.
Down?
It mostly burned down. The entire back is missing and part of the roof, but, you know, the front end is still standing.
It's kind of like this movie when you cut 40% of the script.
Yeah.
You're kind of left with a mostly burnt house.
That's what, yes, yeah.
No bones.
No bones.
Man, dude, you're one of the, like, the Snyder heads. But with Matthew Bright, you're a Bright head. You're like, release the Bright cut, dude.
Seriously.
I need the Bright cut. I need to know.
That's crazy.
And I guarantee you, of all the footage they cut, they didn't cut a single scene with Gary Oldman in it.
No, they're thinking Oscar nomination for this guy.
The role of a lifetime.
Role of a lifetime.
Role of a lifetime, yeah.
So the scenes that were cut was everybody else.
Yeah, Oldman is top billed. And it's weird because I guess him and Dinklage are the opening scene of the movie. When they're on motorcycles or whatever.
Again, the tone of that opening, you would think it's like a Chevy Chase movie or something.
Right.
Just like, oh.
Like a road trip comedy.
Yeah.
But then McConaughey shows up and you're like, okay, this is McConaughey in 2002 or whatever. Like, he's about to make How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Mm. He's already made The Wedding Planner, right? It's like, this is his Meet the Parents, right? This is him in the Ben Stiller role. And I think to your point, Nick, this is the larger point, is that the movie doesn't do the work to unravel that persona either.
Mm-hmm.
So when the heel turn happens at like 45 minutes, it is wild. Because,
yeah.
You know, the movie swings in tone as quickly as the character does. And
yep,
it's crazy what they do with that character. They just make him the villain. And Kate Beckinsale, who is using the wrong terms at the beginning of the movie and is like all mad at him for hiding this detail from her, becomes the hero. And it's so ham-fisted.
This is when I knew, like, I mean, I knew the film was a piece of shit prior, but I was like, you remember the shot where it's on her lips?
It's so weird.
What was the thought process behind that shot. That's a shot that you use, like, I'm planning to, like, kill you.
Yeah, no, that's like seductive... that's like a Brian De Palma, yeah. Like, erotic thriller, yeah, body double, or, yeah.
Yeah, like, come over and we'll share a drink, and, like, you know, off to the side, I'm gonna fucking kill this
guy.
Yeah,
Sharon Stone, yeah.
But she's the hero of the movie. Like, what is going on?
So, she hasn't met the family. Oldman shows up to her door one day being like, I'm looking for my brother. She's like, oh, okay, you're, yeah, you're that.
Are you and Steven blood brothers?
Yeah, you could say that. We're twins.
Listen, are your parents,
What, little? Yeah. Steven's, he's the big guy in the family.
And she's, like, shocked.
Yeah.
This is the part I want to talk about. She shows up to McConaughey at work. He's in the middle of a field. He's teaching a bunch of cadets, firefighters in training, how to put out fires. She storms in furious. She is wearing, in this scene, I mean, to call them even pajamas is giving them too much credit. She has, like, skull and crossbone flannel pajamas on with, like, a low-cut top with like lace, like it's like lingerie. She's wearing lingerie,
sort of like a lacy crop top almost, or it's like you could see her belly button,
and a hat, a yarn hat that fucking Ebenezer Scrooge would wear with his candlestick as he ran out to greet the ghosts of Christmas past.
Do you have a problem with the costume department here, Nico?
She's wearing pajamas and doing to a firefighting like boot camp. Wild. It is insane.
She's got her bedside slippers on.
How about the idea that, like, I know where to find my husband at work in the field where they like that's where he clocks into work.
So you want to hear the story about the hat?
Why is there a story about the hat?
So Beckinsale was offered this movie, and she said, I'll do it at SAG minimum. You don't got to pay me. One condition. I got to wear my lucky hat to set.
That is not real.
It's true.
You're full of shit.
It's a true story. I got to wear my lucky hat. You got to let me wear my lucky hat. I'll do it for SAG scale.
So you're telling me she pulled a Michael Richards in Curb Your Enthusiasm where I have to wear my lucky hat to be in this scene to play Kramer?
Literally.
What the fuck?
Are you sure this isn't like a long con?
That's nonsense.
This is from Matthew Bright's mouth.
3 episodes from now, you're not going to be like, hey, remember that thing I said? Jokes on you.
April Fools. No, actual thing I read. I don't know if it's real, but it's on IMDb. I don't know. Matthew Bright is making this movie for a producer by the name of John Langley. John Langley is the creator of the television series Cops.
And his name's Langley?
Yes.
That's dope.
Pretty dope, right?
That is dope.
He invented Cops, revolutionized television, essentially creates the reality TV format. The guy's rolling in dough.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to get into movie making. Bright's stepfather is neighbors with John Langley. John Langley says, I'll finance the movie for you. It's a Langley production or whatever. Langley and his wife are on set that day. They see Beckinsale's hat. They go, this hat is fucking ridiculous. She can't wear the hat in the scene. I mean, the same observation I had. I mean, like, I guess I can be a Hollywood producer now.
Sure, yeah.
Doesn't take much.
Making decisions about what fucking hat you're wearing.
Doesn't take much to know. No one leaves the house. No one owns a hat like that. Never mind leaves the house with it. The hat's got to go.
It's got to go.
Hat's got to go. Bright goes, I can't. I promised her she could wear the hat. She's doing this for, like, dirt cheap. She's Kate fucking Beckinsale. She's at the peak of her powers. They go, lose the hat. He couldn't pull it off. He couldn't get her to lose the hat. She wore the hat in the scene. She refused to take the hat off.
How do you tell Kate Beckinsale to lose the hat?
You don't, apparently.
You don't.
The Langleys are like, well, fuck this guy then. And according to Matthew Bright, that was the moment everything turned. The producers lost confidence and took away editing privileges from him in the final cut.
Are you saying Kate Beckinsale's lucky hat has done more harm to the little people community?
If it wasn't for that fucking hat.
All she called her lucky hat. It ruined a fucking it ruined a film. It ruined the culture.
It's the red scarf of this movie, really.
It is! I have no idea if that's a true story, but it's on the internet.
That is nonsense. I don't believe it for a fucking
Yahoo
second.
Yahoo News reported this,
That's insane. Like,
it's the hat, dude. I mean, it's an insane hat. Like, if she was wearing a giant fucking, like, clown hat, if she was wearing, like, an Uncle Sam red, white, and blue, it would be less distracting than this fucking nightcap she wears to a park.
She wears another weird hat in another scene.
Oh, then I'm not sure what the lucky hat was.
I'm seeing a photo here of her sitting next to Gary Oldman. It looks like they're outside, and she's wearing, like, a train conductor's hat.
Oof. I don't know what hat it was. I mean, yeah, maybe it's that one, I guess.
It is one of those things, though. It's like, if you're dating Kate Beckinsale, it's like, how do you like my hat, honey? And you gotta stomach it. You gotta stomach it. It's like,
I mean, listen, the hat looks fantastic. It's just like, no one leaves the house looking like that.
that's the problem, Kate.
No, it's just, you're not from this planet, Kate.
Kate, we're going out to eat.
She just interrupts the fucking boot camp. She's just like, hey! Why didn't you tell me your family was a bunch of little people?
Oh, she doesn't say little people. This is the scene where she just lets the word midget rip.
And he's just like, all right, relax.
Stop saying the word. Work, dude.
Right, so like, that's the thing, right? This movie leads you to believe that he is insecure or feels unsure about telling people this part of his life. And yet when he's confronted, he acts like it's like not a big deal at all. He's like, what? Your parents aren't little people? Like, you know what I mean? That's
gaslights
kind of
are hardcore. That's hardcore great. Gaslighting.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a funny line.
So she meets with Oldman, and then Oldman, like, this has been a major secret. Like, no one knows in his family that McConaughey is getting married. He hasn't met her parents yet either. But then she just, like, goes to brunch with the fam, just meets the entire family. Like, oh, hey.
She forces everyone to get together, yeah.
Right, without McConaughey.
From this point on, when they have that meeting to the end of the film, and I'm just like, this thing is broken.
Yeah.
This movie is so freaking just, like, stupid broken. The way it rushes through, the most significant life changes
right.
in the span of, like, 10 minutes is, man, it was making me just nuts. Because you go from the guess who's coming to dinner moment, and you think it's going to be super awkward, and it turns out, well, if this wedding is happening, it needs to be a Jewish wedding.
I certainly wouldn't want anyone to think that we're prejudiced people.
Daddy! Because...
fact of the matter is... Carol's grandfather is getting on in years.
Please.
And he's an Orthodox Jew, and he's never forgiven us for going Reform. So unless you can bring yourself to have a Jewish wedding, would you at least consider a civil ceremony? Otherwise, we won't be able to invite him.
I got no problem with a Jewish wedding.
Uh-uh. Are you sure?
Yeah, Mom.
Yeah, there's that really cringy scene with the uncle, too, where she's like, I don't know about having a little person son. And he's like, ah, little people are just like you.
Except little.
And it just feels like an entire PSA squeezed into one lunch worth of dialogue.
If I have this baby and it turns out to be little, what does that mean in terms of raising him?
There'll be rough patches, there's no doubt about it.
But that's what life is all about. Dealing with hardship. If a person can't deal with that, then they can't ever be happy.
I just want my kid to have a happy, productive life.
Of course you do.
There's nothing about being little that precludes being happy or productive.
Yeah. Look at us.
So we're skipping over the part where Beckinsale's like, hey, I just hung out with your brother today and I met your entire family, the one that you've been hiding from me for a year and a half. You're not mad, are you? And he's like, nah, not mad. Is that right? All right.
Exactly.
But he's actually seething when you see him on the other side of the call. And he takes the cell phone and he chucks it across the mountaintop. And this is the moment where one of the students emerges from the bushes and like, hey, good call. You lied to her or whatever. So tonal shift, a complete 180 in terms of character. All of a sudden,
yes,
he's an adulterer. Just out of nowhere, all of a sudden he's cheating on her and is like really angry and has a rage problem and he's keeping the secret. And in that moment, I'm starting to put the pieces together And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. They're positioning him to be the bad guy. And Oldman seems like a pretty good dude. And I'm like, oh my God, this is where the movie is going.
It's that one part and we never see it again.
And it's also just implied.
It's funny you mentioned that when they introduced the part about the adulterer, because it was the same moment where I realized, like, they're not going to do that, are they?
Right.
No. No. And then they do it.
Right.
And once you come to terms with that, it's like you're just trying to reconcile it until the ending. It's just like, am I ready?
My problem is I didn't pick any of this up until the ending, and then the movie ended. Do you understand? Like, my entire watching of this movie was, when is McConaughey going to get his redemption?
No.
Which is, again, this is why I'm saying that the scene that should have been the inciting incident was obviously cut from the film because it wasn't obvious.
Oh, Nick, I wish I had that experience.
Yeah, no, because I'm thinking to myself,
hell of a watch.
They're doing the Hitchcock close-up on the lips thing, and the dramatic music is coming in, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, they're positioning this now as a...
No, I was waiting for McConaughey to, like, you know, get over it, redeem himself, be a good father. No, but again, skipping around a little bit, but yeah. At the wedding, they get married, everything seems fine, and... The most important moment here is as she's driving away with McConaughey, she goes, wait, hold on, stops the car, runs out to meet Rolf, and she kisses him on the lips very briefly and says, thank you for everything.
That's right.
He hasn't done jack shit in this cut of the film. There's nothing to thank him for.
Yeah.
He's just been in the same room as her a couple of times.
He's just been a good guy.
Yeah, knowing that little people are good people.
Right.
Not evil, tooth-stealing demons. What did she think they were?
Well, clearly, Nick. Obviously, that's what she...
Like, what is the... There's so much missing.
Yeah, just letting her know, like, yeah, little people are people too.
That's true. She didn't know that prior to meeting.
It's only
Rolf.
The size of your heart that matters.
She needed
when the going gets tough.
She needed a big person playing a little person to know that.
Adam, you were 100% right that it's at these moments of these major life-changing events, the wedding followed by the baby, this is where the movie completely falls apart, and it seems pretty clear that, I mean, there's still a lot missing from the first half, but I think they really started scraping the guts out around the second half.
I'm sure there were bits and pieces at the beginning of the film, but I think the first, it's a little over a half. It's like, it's like 50 minutes of the movie. You can at least, like, I don't know, kind of follow what's going on. And then, yeah, you get to that last third, and it is just a disaster on all fronts.
There's also this weird scene of McConaughey and Beckinsale in bed together.
Yes, yes. I wanted to pull this clip and I didn't get to.
It'll be in the final cut. Don't worry about it. they're talking about the medical complications that often are the result of a parent with dwarfism in their genes. Although, I did do a little bit of research into this. Apparently, the science behind the fear in this movie, and actually what happens in this movie, is inaccurate.
Ooh.
Correct.
Grossly inaccurate. For the overwhelmingly most common form of dwarfism, it is only possible to inherit the gene if either parent is a dwarf, which is obviously not the case here. For the less common forms of hereditable dwarfism, it is only possible to have a dwarf child if both parents have a family history of dwarfism, and the film does not show Carol's family to have such a history. In fact, Steve being the only average-sized individual from a family of dwarfs makes it overwhelmingly likely that he did not inherit any genes for dwarfism and therefore has a next-to-nothing chance of having a dwarf child.
Ha.
So this is just not a thing that actually happens, but...
Well, I mean, again, that scene, Adam, where they're filming her mouth, maybe she's been cheating too.
Ooh, there we go.
Now here's a theory.
It's actually Rolf's kid.
Now we're getting somewhere, Nick. Let's go.
That's it.
We love how Nico's like, I need a button to press.
Guys, we fixed the movie.
I don't think that really fixes it. I don't know.
Oh, that's...
I think
funny.
It makes it way worse, actually.
During this conversation in bed, they're talking about... she asks him a bizarre question.
Right.
She just goes, have you ever slept with a little person?
Because I think she's kind of starting to get turned on by the whole idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what's happening here. I think she's
That's
kinda,
an interesting...
You know?
I didn't read it that way, but I also severely misread this film, so...
I think she's kind of smitten with Oldman at this point. You know, she kind of sees something in him, and I think she's starting to get ideas.
Yeah.
You know, in the way that, yeah, sometimes, like, you're curious, and you're like, oh, really? You ever, you know?
Never given it a shot.
Yeah. And... yeah, McConaughey's like, yeah, all right, I'll tell you.
You know, the kids come over, we'd sit in a circle, play doctor and that kind of thing. Could have been more than 10 or 12, so that doesn't really count.
Was it you had a circle jerk with a bunch of little people? I would love to see that.
I would like to see that.
So, yeah, they talk about circle jerking and things, and they end up, like, arguing at the end of it. Because she's like, you need therapy. You're so ambivalent about your family. You need therapy. And he's like, I don't need therapy. And that's a little foreshadowing of what's to come when the child ultimately arrives. Turns out the child is, in fact, a dwarf.
Well, it turns out the child is, in fact, a doll.
Right.
Yeah, it's the first ever Clint Eastwood's form of inspiration here.
This is the fakest looking fucking baby.
Yes.
It ain't faker than American Sniper, though,
that
dude.
That fucking baby.
It ain't faker than that.
Fake as shit.
You know the story with American Sniper, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, they couldn't. The baby was supposed to be on screen.
The baby was late. The baby just didn't show up to set on time.
Clint just gravels. He's just like, ugh, all right.
Clint's like, I have a calzone order coming in at 12:30. We got to finish this scene by lunch.
Use the calzone.
Yeah, you know Clint. He's just like, let's move it along here.
No, I think his actual line was like, bring out the doll.
Bring out the doll.
Bring out the doll.
Because Clint has no time when he directs.
No.
It's just like, we're getting done today. I'm not coming back here tomorrow.
Which is funny, because there's probably not a guy who has more time right now
than Clint Eastwood.
The clock is ticking on Clint, though, Nick. Like, he figures, I got 10 more movies to make before I croak.
Jeez Louise, I can't believe that guy's still directing movies.
He's in pre-production on another one. He's making another movie this year.
I know, he's insane.
Yeah. Then the baby arrives. He's like, fuck. I can't raise a dwarf kid, even though I've grown up with these people entire life.
What do you mean you can't raise a dwarf kid?
Punches a hole in the wall. He's quite angry. The doctor's like, you need to take a chill pill, bro.
The doctor, by the way,
Another
little person.
Yeah. We should mention, by the way, like, every little person that you've ever seen in a movie ever is in this movie. Like,
except Vern Troyer.
Vern Troyer is not. That's true.
And Wee Man is not as well.
Well, okay, I guess.
No Vern Troyer, no Warwick Davis.
They trained thespian. Wee Man.
Wee Man.
I guess.
He's doing.
It's not like he was a nobody back then,
he's
though.
Too busy doing Richard the Third.
Guess, Nick. But the arm from Twin Peaks is in this?
Yeah, that made me smile.
He plays McConaughey's dad.
Yeah, that was great.
I think it's the first time I've ever heard him speak four words.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
There was no Warwick Davis in this movie, but, you know, British actor, so I guess it makes some sense.
Right.
But I love that Warwick Davis. He's the man.
Are you saying British people can't be in this film because there's a huge hole with that?
Yeah, Kate Beckinsale's British.
I guess Kate Beckinsale is British. I forgot about that.
And the dink is not French.
I was curious about, like, the parents don't have an accent, right?
No.
So why do the children have an accent?
Like Southern accent, you
mean?
Yeah. I don't know. Just go with it, man.
Just go with it.
Yeah,
like Gary Oldman. Just, you know, just go with it.
Maybe they relocated late in life. You know, maybe they're not from the South. Maybe they just moved there.
I think McConaughey just has one voice, and Oldman was like, "Well, I'll just do what he's doing."
I think that's exactly
that's all it is. Yeah, doing.
Well, I'm his twin brother, so I got to channel my McConaughey
doing the legwork there.
Wow,
that's wow.
I didn't even mean to do that. I thought about it after I said it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry. Oh, shit.
So, he quickly skips town, goes out for cigarettes, never comes back. It's just like, I can't do it. It's not good for the baby. I'm like so angry all the time because he cries too much.
I love the scene where the baby's crying And I don't know, as far as I could tell, it's just a baby crying, right? And she's like, you're scaring the baby. And he's like, you know why he's crying? Because he's in pain. Because he's a dwarf.
What? Just say the word one time, girl. What's his condition? Huh? 10 months you hadn't said it one time. What's his condition? Why is he crying? Why is he hurting? Because he's a dwarf. Carol, he's a dwarf.
He's a baby and you're scaring him.
He's a baby and he's a dwarf and that ain't why he's crying. He's crying because he hurt.
Fuck
his inside can't get outside.
Fuck you.
One time, say the goddamn word. He's a dwarf. I'm a dwarf.
I'm like, I don't know, man. Maybe not. Maybe he's hungry.
I was going to say, it's a baby, you fool.
Like, what the fuck? He's just assuming the baby is in immense pain. Meanwhile, it looks like a regular ass baby when it's not a doll, of course.
Beckinsale runs away from home, goes to the cabin.
That cabin.
In the middle of the forest where Oldman is hanging out with Dink and Patricia Arquette. I feel like we've given very little shine to Dinklage and Patricia Arquette in this movie, by the way, who are just kind of off doing their own thing.
Yeah, I guess there is a moment where they get a hotel together and the hotel's like, hey, we don't solicit prostitution. And she's like, I'm not a prostitute.
Right.
And then they don't check out on time. So Dinklage pulls out a gun and he's ready to shoot the hotel owner. And instead, she goes outside and beats the hotel owner with her flip flops. Is that right? I mean,
I think that's right. Yeah.
And that moment, Dinklage is in love.
So Dinklage is an angry guy and Arquette is in love with him. And it's like, oh my God, these two great actors are just doing this. It's just like what used to be a country. You know what I mean?
It used to be a country.
There used to be roles for these two kinds of people. And I guess, listen, later on in life, they've both done fine for themselves.
Oh yeah.
But rough times in 2002.
When is Elf, by the way?
It's a year later.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, Station Agent and Elf are both 2003.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Which is a huge year for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she shows up to the cabin. Adam, you teased in the group chat that this was a filming location you recognized.
Instantly. I was like, what the hell are they doing there? And I was looking at him like, yeah, this has got to be a point of trivia. And I looked up and no, there's no trivia on this cabin anywhere. I'm convinced I'm the first person to watch this movie and recognize that this is the same cabin they used in a little film about stabbing.
The film is literally about stabbing.
Called Friday the 13th Part 4.
That was my guess, was Part 4. That's right, I recognized the barn.
The final chapter.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about it, though, because I'm not as big a Friday the 13th fan as you. But
I knew, I was like, that is the Jarvis cabin. I was like, the first time I noticed was actually not the exterior, but it was when they were going down the stairs, because you get the
ending.
I was like, I think that's what it is. And then they cut to the wide, I'm like, there it is. I just knew it.
No reference to that on the internet.
Nope, I guess not. No. Nah.
Interesting.
This film was about height, though. Very important.
The size of your heart that counts.
By the way, the tagline of this movie is, it's the little things in life that matter, I think. I think that's the actual tagline.
That's right. Yeah, it's the little things in life that matter.
Oh, my God.
Shows up at the place. Oldman's there with just these two fucking, you know, sexual deviants. These two people just fucking all the time. And he's so sick of it. They just fight and fuck. Yeah. And he just has to lay there. And he's a great guy. We've established Oldman. And Beckinsale is like, hey, brother-in-law. Another kiss on the old lips right there. And then there's this scene where they're all sitting around.
Yeah.
Oh, baby's hungry. Got to breastfeed the baby. And Oldman gets a peek in a movie full of just bad taste. Like, this is just brutal. Where he's like, oh, so seductive. You're breastfeeding in public.
It's an exploitation film.
Like, it's just so hacky and retrograde, that entire thing.
You could tell it's made by someone who has those, like, sensibilities.
Yeah, by a child.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wouldn't it be hot if, like, Kate Beckinsale breastfed her baby on the porch?
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Dink and his girlfriend are fighting in the background while this is happening, and they start blaring music.
Yeah.
And it is just unlistenable for a moment. The characters are talking and the music is getting louder, and it's not like engineered in a way that you would normally hear it engineered in a movie like this.
McConaughey comes back. All right. I chilled out now, went to therapy. She's like, no, you have to be a dad. He's like, I don't know if I'm ready to be a dad yet.
What did you go to therapy for?
Not a really good daddy.
I was hoping
know?
We could just come back and fuck again.
Yeah. Because I'm McConaughey and you're Kate Beckinsale. All right, all right, all right. by the way, McConaughey not shirtless once in this movie.
Yes, he is. In bed.
Oh, I guess.
He's shirtless in bed. Yeah.
Okay, I feel like
it's not the same.
They didn't play the card enough.
When he was training those other firefighters, that should have been like...
Yeah!
Yeah, it's getting a little hot outside.
Yeah, should have been half naked.
Yeah, she should have showed up in her PJs, and he should have been, like, shirtless, and they're having that whole conversation.
There we go. Should have been, like, the opening of a Magic Mike dance. Yeah.
Ooh, maybe that's where this character went. He went and joined the Magic Mike Dance Club. That would make some sense, kind
of. It's a form of therapy.
It is.
Oh, that's great. Yes.
Yeah.
Former firefighter? Totally.
There we go.
So, yeah. So, the movie's going there. It's definitely going there. Yeah. McConaughey leaves. Oldman and Beckinsale hold hands afterwards.
No, as he leaves. Like, if he looks in his rearview mirror, he will see them holding hands. Like, this is not...
Right. And McConaughey's kind of mad at them, but not really mad at them. You know, the quiet part isn't really being said out loud here.
Doesn't Oldman ask him, are you mad?
Yeah. So it's like, okay, they're together now, it seems like. But are they having sex? Is it physical? Is this just like a partnership? Like, what is this? I'm like, is there another scene missing there?
Waiting for the movie to offer some clarity.
Right.
Yeah. And please, for the love of God.
Oldman asks Beckinsale as she's laying in bed with that gorgeous fucking sleeping cap on and more lingerie. God, her outfits in this movie. Jesus fucking Christ. He's like, yeah, you're having a hard time sleeping. Come with me. Pulls the old fire and gazing up at the stars trick.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking Rolf, dude.
Rolf's the man.
World-class stick man, you know what I mean? Just like, bring her outside, get the fire going.
Yeah.
Check out the night sky.
Who's watching the baby?
Nobody.
Baby's all right.
All right, all right, all right.
Yeah.
We did forget last line for McConaughey is that great, love my son.
Right.
Which is just really hits all the feels.
Which I really like that he's not just saying, like, okay, my relationship with my wife is over, but also I'm abandoning this child.
Yeah.
Like, I've abandoned my boy! Give me the blood, Lord. Give me the blood.
And let me get away.
Yeah, so then she's like, all right, you can kiss me if you want. And they kiss. And scene. And that's the fucking movie.
We're done.
Doesn't it take away from the you can kiss me if you want the fact that she's kissed him like twice already?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like I feel like all of that was implied that they're just like living this domestic partnership without making it like physically explicit.
But those were not real kisses, guys. Those were, you know, family kisses, I guess.
That's how they do it in that family.
That's exactly, yeah. That's just how they do it. Dealer, yeah. It's that kind of family. So that's how it is with her family.
Yeah, no, it's really weird. It's bizarre. It doesn't feel good. It feels really icky. And this is a bad fucking movie. It's bad on so many levels. It's so awful. Matthew Bright went on to go to the Sundance premiere of this movie. Gary Oldman paid his plane ticket to get out. Now, Bright tried to disown the film. He tried to get his name taken off of the credits. Oldman was like, hey, I'll fly you out to Sundance and you can say a couple of words before the movie. And he gets on stage and he says, this movie was taken from me. I will never forgive the producers of this film for doing what they did. Put him on blast. The Langleys end up like storming the stage at Sundance and like security had to get involved and like,
whoa,
it became like a big media circus or whatever. So, yeah, Matthew Bright's just like, yeah, I tore him a new asshole. It was pretty sweet. And then, so here's the movie. Here's the butchered movie that's an hour shorter than my cut. And he still, to this day, claims he's, quote unquote, never seen it. And you know how those things go. Yeah, I've never seen it. Yeah, right. Okay, you've never seen it. Never read that review. Okay. Mm. I buy it. Yeah, that's the legacy of this film. Tiptoes.
It's a piece of shit.
Tiptoes.
A piece of shit.
Tippy toe.
Lemon tree.
Who do I gotta blow to get a copy of this director's cut?
I'm sure we could track it down, honestly.
It did screen?
It screened, yeah.
Okay.
It's back when Ain't It Cool News was a thing, and they had that film festival.
Butt-numathon?
Yeah, Butt-numathon. Yeah. So it screened at that, premiered at that.
Okay.
2.5-hour cut.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Nick, have a great honeymoon. Enjoy. Thanks. Have a Guinness on me. Or two.
Or three.
You sending me money? Is that what you mean by that?
No, that's a good point.
You gonna send me some cash?
It's not on me, but think of me when you sip on it, all right?
What is the world record for most Guinness stouts drank?
I mean, I know just the book to reference.
Really? Really, Nico?
Yeah, all right, that's it. Anything else we got, gents?
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.